Being a Christian woman and walking in God's calling for our lives can be a difficult task. With the world and pop culture telling us to be one way, and the Bible saying another, you kind of end up feeling like an other. Well, you're not alone. Join me now and my friends as we navigate life in our 20s and 30s, while making sure we live out our faith, embrace our femininity, and looking cute. We discuss pop culture, life, careers, relationships, and so much more. Prepare to be entertained and educated. I know you're going to love it. Join our movement and embrace being another girl.
The views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not reflect our employers. Enjoy. Everyone, you are listening to Those Are the Girls with Mallory and Friends. I'm Mallory.
And I'm Jamie.
And we are changing culture and bringing back traditional values. Welcome back. I finally have another co-host. I look at the analytics and everybody does like when I have another co-host. So I will try to keep bringing people on. Jamie actually was also requested. I want to say, like, last episode you were on, someone did comment on the Spotify, please have her on again. So she's back. Oh. Everybody. Yeah. Legitimately, someone said, please have her on again.
Oh, thank you. Well, I have returned at your request.
So we have some interesting stories to talk about. It's going to be like kind of like a different TCAP. There hasn't really been too much. I'm saying we're recording this on Wednesday. This is going to come out on Monday, and I'm sure something's going to happen just the way luck works. And in the next couple of days, we're like, but nothing really as crazy has happened. But we do have some things that we must discuss. But before we do that, everyone, I want to remind you of Tea Party June 1st. If you live in the Charlotte area, or if you're coming to the Charlotte area around June 1st, we're doing a tea party at A Cause for Tea, which is a really cute tea house. And we're going to be dressing up, looking cute, taking pictures. And we're also going to be talking about what does it mean to be a real girl's girl in today's culture as a Christian? Because we know that culture, and we talk about it here on the podcast, you can go on Twitter and even see it. We know that the world has an idea of what a girl's girl is. And sure, there probably are some things that are noble and fine, but we need to figure out as Christians, what is a girl's girl? Because that is our worldview, and that is how we should be viewing the lens. That's how we should be viewing our fellow sisters. So we'll be talking about that on June 1st. I think those are all the announcements. Yeah, I think that's it. So, Jamie, are you ready to, like, just dive in?
I am ready.
Okay. The first thing I want to talk about, and we kind of, I do this with everybody that I have on as a guest as friends. We kind of, like, talk for an hour, sometimes 2 hours before, and then we start recording. So, we kind of talked a little bit about this, but hopefully we'll still continue to be funny talking about it again. So, the first and only article, really, that I am going to read is from the New York Post, and the title is None of Forbes Billionaires Are Under 30. Okay, let me read that again. None of Forbes billionaires under 30 are self-made for the first time in 15 years. Their bank accounts are stacked with family money. For the first time since 2009, none of those who made Forbes' list of billionaires under 30 generated their massive wealth on their own. This year, 18 of the 25 youngest of the world's billionaire list inherited their wealth. The statistic is partly due to self-made billionaires aging into their 30s and not being replaced by others in the same financial situation. The Business Magazine reported in an article titled World's Youngest Billionaires 2024. The hefty inheritances are also the start of what the outlet calls a, quote, long-anticipated generational wealth transfer, end quote. Trillions are expected to change hands every year as the affluent elderly pass away and leave their fortunes to descendants. Okay, wait, side note. I don't know if you remember this. A couple years. Just remind me. I have something about billionaires dying to say. Just reminding. Let me finish. Sorry, everybody. The title of the youngest billionaire in the world goes to 19-year-old Livia Vigotti of Brazil. Mm-hmm. The college student who has a net worth of $1.1 billion has a minority stake in her late grandfather's electrical equipment production company, WEG. I feel like I don't know what that is, but like I've seen it places. She was accompanied on the list by her older sister, Dora, who was 26. A pair of 20-something billionaire brothers from Ireland also made the list. Zahn and Friz Mistry are estimated to have a net worth of a staggering $4.9 billion each. And the duo are 25 and 27, respectively. They're the sons of the late Cyrus Mistry, former chairperson of India's largest conglomerate, the Tata Group. Let me see here. Oh, Clementine Vehicho, 19. She earned a stake in Elixir Lux Tata, the Italian French maker of Ray-Ban, after his dad died. Let me just see if there's anybody else that, like, we would all know. No, there's no other that, like, really big brands. So what I really wanted to say, because we were talking about, so before, you guys, we were talking about billionaires and, like, how, for example, like, these people, I don't know their names. Like, we don't know. Like, the really, really, really rich people, we probably don't know. And we probably never really will know.
Mm-hmm.
I recognize Ray-Ban because that's just, like, a classic thing. But everything else, I was just like, I don't know what that is. Well, I don't know if you remember this. I want to say a year, maybe even 2 years ago. People noticed that a large chunk, like billions of dollars, was either reported or left to the IRS, which meant some sort of billionaire had died. Like, somehow people who, like, are into that stuff, they saw and the conclusion came to a billionaire had died. And I don't think they ever found out who it was, because, like, they tried to figure out who it was. But once again, these people aren't really, they're not famous. They're not, they don't have, like, Twitters, and they're not trying to, you know, go to the moon. So we don't really know who they are. I just found that interesting. What were your thoughts when you heard that none of them are self-made?
Well, first of all, I didn't know about the dying billionaire, but that's wild. That nobody would be able to figure out who that person was. But I think that's what I've noticed about the absolute richest of the rich, is that they don't want to be known. They don't have the same needs as, say, people who, like, they want to get rich and famous, that type of person. The people who are extremely wealthy have been wealthy for generations. They don't need to get famous to fill up their confidence and get validation. They know that they're the best people because they've been literally told for generations that they're the best. Their dad has been told that he's the best, his dad and his dad and his dad. So when you meet a truly wealthy, wealthy person, they are not the slightest bit insecure. Because there's nobody in their family who's dealt with needing to be validated by others. They just paid for things. They felt validated in their wealth. And so you won't know those people's names. The people that people think of as, like, the rich people, the celebrities, like, I'm telling you, as somebody who worked with celebrities too, these people do not have the money you think they have. And they make that very clear in the way that they pay people. And when you try to fight for more, you actually understand the limitations that they have financially. And you're like, wow, like, you know, you're on this big show, but, like, this is the only house you can afford. And yeah, it's a nice house. And yeah, it's in a great location. But I think in people's minds, they're like, oh, you have this, like, huge, gorgeous house in Hollywood. And so you have, like, a stacked bank account. Like, to you, there's no limits. But these people, while they have a lot more than a lot of people do, they're by no means anywhere close to limitless. And so I think the issue is when you have people, like, going after, like, oh, these are the wealthy, you're going to miss the true wealth, which are actually the people who are truly running things. And those are people that, like, they're the ones that get involved in government. They're the ones that are hiding their money in different countries and different banks. And so to find out, and circling this back to the actual subject at hand, to find out that there are no self-made, was it billionaires or was it millionaires?
Yeah, billionaires.
No self-made billionaires under 30 makes absolute sense, unfortunately, especially as somebody who also, like, I work at a company where my boss will tell all of the people, like, hey, this tax is really difficult for us to take, like where it's really hard to build. It's really hard to be an American-based brand with these taxes or these limitations, whatever it is. When you put all these limitations on businesses and tax them, it just becomes hard to be an entrepreneur, which makes it hard for you to make your own money in any way other than being born into it and being taught by those people like, hey, here's our money and here's how you invest. I'm glad more people are learning about investing, but investing is also, it necessitates that you have money to invest with. So people who win big already have a lot of money to play the game with in the first place.
Absolutely.
And I think it's unfortunate, but at the end of the day, people not understanding how wealth is built and then blaming the wrong people and then voting accordingly has caused all of the problems that we're seeing, where people aren't actually creating companies that are getting big and giving them money that they very well deserved. Like, I think it's also really ridiculous how people are like blaming business owners or feeling like, oh, the big bad, whether it's like Walmart or the big bad, like, I just watched You've Got Mail last night. Like, so just, it feels like, oh, the big bad Fox Books. But all these people are very smart at business. And unfortunately, I must tell you that Joe Fox runs a better business than Meg Ryan. Just like the way that he scaled his business was just very well done. And that's why he makes money. And it's the same thing with, you know, American companies. I think we can actually say the Walton family who own Walmart, they're very smart in the way that they did that business, and maybe they deserved all that success. And so, yeah, unfortunately, I think a lot of bureaucracy has changed things in this country. But anybody who watches this podcast knows that you're on the same page as us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to piggyback what you said about entrepreneurship. I think entrepreneurship was, and it still can be. I do think, like, I'm not one of those people, their American dream is dead. Oh, I don't feel that way at all. But I definitely feel like it's definitely not my grandparents' American dream. And, you know, even thinking about, like, my grandparents' American dream, especially, you know, as someone who's Black, they have seen so much growth, especially, like, you know, my brother and I, my parents, college graduate, anyway. They have seen so much growth in their small amount of time. Like, you know, my great grandparents probably never imagined that I could have a podcast where I finance it myself and I have people listening to me that aren't even like put race back in there, that aren't even like my same race. Like, so that dream that they have is like, it's been exponential. Now, the dream that like we have is just so, it's possible, you know, like, but I do think it's a little bit more difficult, just because, like you said, like some of the taxes, the economy. I was listening to Breaking Points, which I'll link there. I did a segment on this, and Sagar made a really good point. He was like, people should not have to take out a second job to pay their rent that has been the same or that has gone up the last 5 years. That is a sign of like a weak economy. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with having to take a second job if you want to go on a vacation. That's kind of noble. That shows you're working hard. You understand that. But if you have not really changed anything, then there's no reason for you. You should not have to take a second job. There was also this article. I haven't seen it yet, but I should have looked at it. But there was an article they were talking about where it was like the new millennials' new luxury are groceries. And it's like, that shouldn't be a luxury. And don't get me started on like eating healthy. Like, I mean, people can say, well, it's one thing that, and kind of what you were saying about you have to have the money to invest. It also made me think of this too. Like, it all is like, they say, for example, oh, if you invest more into eating healthy, then you won't have to pay these terrible medical bills later. That's absolutely true. But you have to have the money now. Like, that's what I think people don't understand. Like, you, sure, but like Mary Sue, whose husband has died and they were living paycheck to paycheck and she doesn't have, a lot of people, believe this or not, a lot of people, they don't have like life insurance. They don't have like extra money. What you do is you go to your family members and say, hey, can you chip in to help bury this person, because you don't have, they don't even have money to be buried. So there's people living in America like that, for those that don't know. So, you know, Mary Sue, she has to take care of her five kids, or I'll say two kids even. It costs less to stop by McDonald's really quick than and make a and get a burger from there than to get all the ingredients to make a burger. Sure, it's gonna, if you get the ingredients, it's gonna last longer. But the problem is she doesn't have the money right now to even do that. All she has is $3. What can she get for $3 that's healthy? The only thing she can get is like a something from the dollar menu. Anyway, that's like, you know, that's a whole nother rant. But with the investing, like, I, growing up, I didn't know about investing. That wasn't really a thing we talked about. And investing is great, like you said, but you have to have like money to invest. I have a little, I use this app that's like for women by women. It's kind of corny, I'm not gonna lie, but it's cute. And you know, anything with pink and for women, I kind of just, okay, I'll do it. And they like, I put $100 in a month and they invest for me, right? The reality is the girls who are putting in $6,000 a month are getting probably like millions more, maybe not millions, but hundreds of thousands more money than I do with my little hundred. Like a hundred, from what I'm seeing, isn't making a real dent. It's almost just like a savings for me at this point. Because you have to have, like, to make money, you have to have money to start a business. For those that don't know, I have a jewelry business, shopthepinkrose.com. You have to have the money to buy the materials, to buy the supplies. So now I don't know why I'm on this rant in regards to
it makes sense. Starting a business is costly. So if you're if we're talking about self-made people who are under 30, you need to have enough money to actually create the business. And just as an example, this was only, I don't know, within the past eight or ten years ago, I had a friend who started a skincare company. It's actually a brilliant skincare company. But she was going back and forth with a chemist to make the formula of like one product. This is one product we're talking. She has, I think, six products in the line or something like that, maybe more now, but this is just one product. Okay. And I just, as an aside, I will say, when you are making a product with a lab, you will find that you need to go back and forth a few times before you get things the way you want them, as good as you want them. Mm-hmm. So when people ask me, oh, Jay, like, what's the like best mascara at the drugstore? I will say this about every product that you put on your face. It's like performance based. Whoever has the most money wins, because you need money to go back and forth to the lab and say, like, and pay the scientist again to reformulate,
mm-hmm.
and pay the cost of like the time and the material for all of that to be remade, and then the packaging for it, a whole separate story. So when it comes to like the best products at the drugstore, people are always like, oh, like, wow, Maybelline makes great products. Well, of course Maybelline makes great products. Maybelline is a huge company. They have endless amounts of money. They're owned by L'Oreal. L'Oreal also owns Redken and Garnier Fructis. And
I didn't know they own Maybelline.
Yeah, they own Maybelline. They also own Lancome. So
wow,
a lot they of say- formulas of Lancome mascaras between Lancome and L'Oreal are very similar or the same product, because it's the same company.
Yeah.
So most cosmetics, like company wise, are, if they're not self owned, they're either owned by L'Oreal or Estee Lauder. Those are the big companies in the makeup game.
And they're just kind of trying to do different price points. Same formula, just different price points. That's a tip, everyone. Yeah. You're paying extra for some of the stuff, but if it's owned by the same company, it's the same product. Interesting.
I will say there's a difference if there are skincare ingredients, because the ingredients in skincare are expensive because they're hard to find. They're also sensitive to the way they're packaged and the way they're kept. So skincare spend money, but makeup maybe don't. But I will say, like I said, with performance-based products that go on the face, whoever has the most money wins, because you're going back and forth with a lab. And so my friend, she's starting this company, right? So she's one product. She wasn't even done with the formula. This was, I think at this point, it was either the first or second time she'd sent the product to the lab. I think she sent it back 3 or 4 times because she was particular, wanted to get this product so that she could say, hey, I made this product and I love this product, and not just sell you something because she wanted to make money. Mm-hmm. So this is one product, maybe once or twice the lab, $36,000.
Oh my goodness. That's crazy.
And this is 8 or so years ago, so it's more now. $36,000, one product. And so whenever people be like, Jay, start a skincare line. You'd be so good at that. $36,000, one product. I do not have $36,000 to bring to a lab once, and I know I would send it back at least 7 times.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I think that's something that people don't know and realize. Like, I listen to a lot of entrepreneur podcasts just because, like, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. What people don't realize is people invest a lot of money. There are outliers, of course, that, you know, there's outliers, but like the majority, you have to already have money. That is something I learned. I was listening to, Boys Lie. Do you know that brand? Boys Lie.
I've heard of it, but I'm not familiar.
They like started off as makeup, I think, and then they did t-shirts. Anyway, they were honest. They said that they, oh goodness, I think it was like $50,000 from like friends and family, which first of all, I don't know people like that, but they said it was straight up just friends and family all together gave them $50,000. So, and that's how, and because of that, they were able to get their products and do marketing and do X, Y, and Z. There was a huge mix up with the shipment of something. And like, you know, if something's wrong with a shipment of jewelry that I get, or even like supplies, I also do custom pieces sometimes. If something's wrong with that shipment, that's like, oh my goodness, I have to do more. But she said, because they had that money, they were like, oh man, well, let's do it again. You know, like money is like, it makes the difference. And I think, I guess to tie it back into the self-made thing, I think it's just a sign of like how the economy is going. I don't think that we're in a downward spiral and that spiral will never get back. I just think, bless you. Just think that like we are in a time where, I guess a testing time where like in, I don't know if it's an official recession or anything like that, but like we're not in our best. We're not doing our best. I'll just put it that way.
We've looked better in the past, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. We've looked better in our past. And this is just a sign of the times that like, and I think also it was interesting. The article mentioned that, for example, like Zuckerberg and some of the tech guys, I was just listening to like the guy who created Uber, all of them, they're not on the list because they've aged, which also makes you think like, when was the last time there was like a major tech company that shifted the culture? When was the last time?
Do you think that? I think two things also might factor into this. Do you think that one, the lack of work ethic in younger generations plays into this? And two, do you also possibly think that I think like we've been sold a lie about where we're at as a world ecologically? I think that there has been this, like, what, like, the state of the planet as far as its health, whatever you believe, I do think it's been, I think we can maybe agree it's been exaggerated as to, like, how close the world is to, like, nature exploding. Yeah. And I think when we saw what happened with COVID, like, we didn't go outside for 2 weeks and already, like, plants were like, we're back. And, like, the dolphins were swimming the Venice canals and we're like, we love it here.
Oh, the deer were like having a field day where I am. They were, all the animals were acting different. Good point.
Nature came back like that. 2 weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks we were out.
Yeah.
So I think that there's been a mass exaggeration about like the state of the world. And I think there are a lot of young people in stress, like, it's the end of the world. Why bother doing anything?
Yeah.
Does that factor in as well, do you think?
Good question. Because there are a lot of people who feel very doom and gloom about it all. And that kind of goes back, I think, to social media, which was made by these tech people that didn't, you know, pave the way for new tech. But that could have something to do with it. Like, there are a lot of people who doom and gloom, and there are people who I think are, I hate saying that, because, like, I would probably put millennials in this, not all, but, like, some millennials in this and Gen Z. Like, I hate saying that, like, our generation is lazy because I don't know what other word it is for what I think the problem, the lethargicness of it is, because there are so many people who are kind of complacent, you know, some people who kind of don't want to do anything innovative, people who just stay, go to work, play video games all day, go to bed. That's like their, and if you're doing that and you don't have time to be creative, I don't even think you necessarily have to start a business, but like if you don't have time to go outside, like ride your bike, paint, you know, meet up with friends for coffee, go to your Bible study, I do think those things affect all of it. I think it's all kind of connected in some way.
I think so. I don't know, maybe
it does.
Our generation, millennials and on, have never been more aware of the stress that they deal with, and also have so many external stressors put on them, things that they can't control. In previous generations, like, you'd hear mostly local news and it was stuff that you could contribute to or help, whereas now we're getting hit with this is happening in the Middle East and this is happening in Asia, like whatever. And you're getting hit with it. But then also, there are a lot of people that want to put guilt and shame on people for not doing enough. They're like, you're not doing enough. There are people suffering hundreds and thousands of miles from here. And then there's all this like weight put on these generations. Older generations didn't have to deal with this, not only because they didn't know about it, but also those expectations weren't on them. They were like, oh, is this happening in our community? Let's see how we can help. Whereas they would hear something like that happens very far away, they're like, well, we can't do anything about that, but what can we do? We can serve our community, we can deal with our own issues. And so I think that that combination of a lot being put on the younger generations and the weird morality that the younger generations have, that like what makes someone a good person ends up being like what you believe and
if you speak up on this.
Yeah, it's more about you speaking than doing anything. So
100%.
Our generations have been taught like, oh, the right thing to do is post a black square on your Instagram tile and do absolutely nothing else. Right. If you didn't post a black square, you're a horrible person.
Some of the meanest, almost racist people did it. But anyway, that's another conversation.
Exactly. It's like that's their version of morality rather than doing something. Like my great grandfather said some maybe like questionable things about women, I will say, like, but he was born in 1912. And he's dead, right. So we're going to give him a pass. But he would say certain things like, you know, about women like being in politics and how he didn't think they should be in politics or like whatever. But my great-grandfather also started the first low-income housing for senior citizens in my hometown.
Wow.
And there's a street named after him for it in this neighborhood.
That's cool.
So there are all these people that like the younger generations demonize. They're like, you have backwards beliefs. I'm like, these people built something that helped people.
And just to piggyback off
down.
And to piggyback off of like that point right there, I think like we have got to realize everyone is multifaceted. Like I'm gonna quote BoJack Horseman again, and I know people are probably like, oh my goodness, this girl's obsessed with that show, but there's just such good quotable things. Diane in an episode says she doesn't believe that people are good or bad, they just do good or bad things. And I think, and I have actually been thinking that, I don't necessarily know how spiritual that is, but like for me at least, like thinking like that like releases, so actually, you know what, that is a Christian belief, because we're all sinners no matter like who you are. Like I'm just as much as a sinner as a murderer. Like I'm not a murderer, but sin still separates you from God. Anyway, my point is though, like if we learn that like people are just so multifaceted, like you don't, then it'll release you from like thinking someone has to be perfect and like sign every petition you put across, or like, you know, people that, well, I don't know if I can support this person. Let me see what they said about this latest thing that just happened. You can release yourself from that if you go, but you know what? Like this person, like, oh, just use your great grandfather. This person actually made a huge difference. I don't agree with some of his beliefs over here, but he actually made a huge difference. So let me recognize him for that. And then we just won't discuss women in politics. Like, I just think we need to, like, let go. There's, I mean, people do this with celebrities all the time. And, like, the fake, like, well, you have to do something. I hate when someone goes, no one's talking about X, Y, and Z. Either A, everyone's talking about it, or B, we have never heard it. How can we be talking about something if we have never heard? On Twitter, mm-hmm. That is, like, it will irk me. It almost will get me to block you. Like, I can't stand that. No one's talking about this super obscure thing that happened and this really thing, and it's probably a terrible, awful thing, but, like, I can't speak out, or, like, I can't comment on something I don't know about. We have this
and
huge...
And you don't know the intricacies of. Because how many times have you said something and that, like... I have a friend who, like, she, because she's, like, Russian-Ukrainian, she knows all about the Russian-Ukraine situation. And so whenever people would speak up about the war, she'd be like, here's the thing that you don't understand about the Ukraine. And somebody would say something else, like, here's the thing you don't understand about Russia. Because you could never know enough, because her family is from there. So, like...
And that's why we have not put out a huge thing about Ukraine. We have not put out a huge thing about Israel and Palestine. I cannot tell you.
Somebody's going to know more, and they're going to call you out.
Literally, I can't, I'm not a you know, a professional on either of those situations, so I'm not going to say something. I will leave it to the professionals. That's not what you're going to get on this podcast. That is, you're so, people do that all the time, or, like, people, you know, they just expect you to know. I think it's that, like, joke that, like, everyone on the internet knows everything and has never made a mistake. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody just expects you to know all of these random obscure things. You can't even comment on something without someone, you know, coming down your throat.
I think that also, like, what you were saying about how people want people to be perfect rather than valuing them for the parts of themselves that are worthy of being honored and praised and seen. Mm-hmm. And I think that inherently is the big issue, is we have wrong expectations.
Yes.
And when we have wrong expectations, we are going to have unsettled emotions. And then we are going to, if we think that those expectations are okay to have, we are going to get bitter. And bitterness is a real problem, because bitterness is, it's going to erode at the state of your heart and mind.
100%.
And it breaks people down. And I can attest to this, and you can probably think of somebody in your life who this correlates to, but have you ever met an older person who has a lot of bitterness towards people, and have you noticed how their health is?
Whoa. I had someone come to mind, and wow. Yeah.
These people suffer from a lot of, like, bone density issues. Arthritis is huge among bitter people.
This person I'm thinking of, I'm pretty sure that person, I'm not going to say gender, that person has arthritis.
Wow. Yeah. Arthritis is actually very, very common among older, bitter people. So if you think, like, oh, I can be entitled to either being treated a certain way, having certain expectations of others to be perfect. I didn't realize
really
I was ballooning when I did this.
I was going to say, are you realizing there's balloons? That's, like, the second time that's happened.
Two. Is it two? Or is it three?
I don't know.
Will three do it?
I don't know that's the second time. Well, let's just see what you're doing to trigger these balloons.
We're going to find out by the end of this episode. We will figure out what creates balloons. But if you have those wrong expectations, then you are going to be incredibly dissatisfied. You're going to be bitter with other people. And don't call me when you are 76 and you are riddled with arthritis, because I told you in the year 2024 that if you remained bitter towards people, especially because you had the wrong expectations of them, it's going to affect your health.
It does. That's something that I definitely have been, you know, working on myself. And I think I said this in the last episode, like, it is so easy to get bitter with social media and seeing and hearing all these things that's going on. Kind of like what you said, we're not supposed to see every major event. I just really don't think humans were supposed to live like that. Mm-hmm. I think we've kind of far exceeded. Anyway, And it is so hard to not get bitter about things, but you have to not get, like, I can even, sometimes even now at like 29, I can see how that affects me. My emotions definitely affect my health. Like, if I'm really out, something really tiny, if I'm really stressing over something, I cannot sleep. And I think everybody feels that way. And I think that's just like the easiest, most tangible thing that we can see. Or even women, like, not to be, you know, too gross or personal, but like your period, when you are stressed, your period can go from like, your cycle can go from like 32 days. I have a friend who was in the middle, like, I think she was like getting married, graduating, moving. And like, it was just a bunch of stuff happening. Her cycle was like 49 days. And like, that's not healthy. Like, you're not, and you know, she's not sexually active or anything like that. It's not healthy. So we know that these things affect our bodies. And I want to also add something or go back to something else you said when you were talking about we're not supposed to see all these things, like, and you talked about like on a global scale. I even think on a local scale, we see too much, like on Twitter. I cannot see another deceased body. Like, anytime something happens, people like post the videos. And like, we're not supposed, like, I don't want to see it. And then, you know, there are people, we have to see this. No, you don't. I'm sorry. Actually, you don't.
I agree. It's actually traumatizing to see it in person. So to traumatize others through seeing all of that, like, what do you think trauma does? Like, just think with me for a moment. What does trauma do? Trauma creates a place for fear to take root in your life. It's another route for stress, anxiety, which is what we were just talking about, how millennials and onward are the most stressed out generation, even though we've had a lot like of different experiences. Like, my great-grandfather fought on D-Day in World War II. He still came back and ran a law firm and started the first low-income senior housing. So don't tell me that I'm more stressed than him. And he grew up during the Great Depression.
Right. Like,
1912 lived right through that. He was a teenager during that time. And to say like, oh, like we're dealing with a lot, like they dealt with it in person.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cruel. It's so cruel to bring people into trauma they have nothing to do with, because trauma affects your soul. Especially if someone is not in Christ, they don't have access to receiving comfort and healing from God, because God is close to the brokenhearted. But if you're not going to God, if you're not aware of that, how are you going to get that broken heart healed? Because that's what trauma does, is it breaks your heart.
Yeah,
this is the ancient Hebrew way of saying like trauma is broken heart.
Yeah.
And
it really, oh God.
And no, go for it.
I was just going to say, you're so right. It really does like break your heart. Cause there was a time where I've had to change. And like, if you guys were really into political Twitter, like 2020, 2021, 2022, like leave, like it has gotten so bad. There was a time I had to like unfollow a bunch of people. They were just posting all these people fighting and then people like bleeding out and all this other stuff. And like, see how bad and it's like, well, I don't need to see how bad the country is. I believe you that these things have happened. I believe, or, you know, when someone unarmed, black, white, Asian, whatever, is shot, they always go, look, this unarmed person was shot. And it's like, I believe you. You don't have to show me. And it is traumatic. Now, obviously, you know, I'm not one of those people that's like, and I had to go see it there. You know, I do think that the person who experienced it received the worst trauma. Like, let's, you know, but I do think there is something to say, like, it is distressing. And if you see it constantly, I mean, the people, there's accounts that's all they post. The people running those accounts probably have like I can't imagine like their hearts and like their countenance. Like, it's so depressing. Mm-hmm. It's not necessary. And, you know, kind of to take it back to the kids, I think that stuff probably is discouraging. You're seeing that all the time. You think that that's how the world is. It's so important. And I mean this with all my heart, to touch grass. Like, it is so important, because once you leave like the social media realm, you see that there are people who are like normal. You see that, like, even though, you know, your liberal neighbor is, you know, maybe they they're whatever. You're liberal. You meet your liberal neighbor and you have a conversation. And you know what? My liberal neighbor literally does not want to kill me. Now, does my liberal neighbor, if we're online, are they probably mad at me? Sure. But they don't literally want to come over and like kill me. But like, if you're online, like you think that every liberal person personally, I heard a commentator say this, like they personally hate you. And it's like, wait a minute. They don't personally hate you. But you're online all the time. You see all this, you get, and then you don't kind of really, you don't want to think about your future. You don't want to think about being innovative. You don't, there's, you know what? Like, I didn't think of that, but you're right. There's probably really creative people that could fix some issues. I'm trying to think of something like specifically, I can't think of anything specific, but there's probably some really creative and innovative people that could have fixed these issues. And, you know, they still might. God can heal their hearts, but they're just so, you know, bogged down by the world, society, everything that's going on.
And to, like, on what you're saying, we've never been more distracted.
Oh, 100%.
And I think, obviously, like, with TikTok now, like, even my attention span is that of a gnat many times. I have to be very, very intentional.
Intentional, and same.
I'm maybe the only person I know who actually really is intentional about the way that I think. And I'm like, okay, I'm getting distracted. I need to focus. I think a lot of people feel like they're being led around by their brain, like a disobedient horse that keeps chomping on plants when you're trying to ride down a trail, which did happen to me in Mexico. I think if we are so distracted, then how can we expect to get things done? And if we have these attention spans and this reward system of like, we're able to get like this dopamine release from getting to the point of a video that takes less than 60 seconds, how are we going to have the stamina, the desire to persevere through a project that takes weeks, months, years, a lifetime?
And I mean,
because that's
even
what a lot of businesses take.
Yeah, 100%. And even like setting up my website, like, I really need to redo my website. So I said Saturday, that's what I'm going to do. And just even thinking about like how long that's going to take, like even me as someone who I really try not to spend too much time, but you know, there are moments where I do give in, but like, I try to be very conscious, like you, like I try to be very conscious of that, but I'm just kind of like, oh, this is going to take forever. But really, like, you know, like 16-year-old me was like, oh yeah, let's do that. And I was like super like, oh, who cares if it takes all day? But now I can see like my attention span is like less, and like, you know, I don't want to say like more cynical, but like, you know, you see life has changed a lot since then. And there was one other thing I wanted to say. I lost it. What was the last thing you said?
About being distracted, or before that?
Before being distracted. I should have
read it. We were talking about attention spans due to technology. And then before that,
you know what? I guess it doesn't matter. Maybe it wasn't meant. And if it's important enough, I'll remember it. But yeah, I can't even remember the last thing I said. Perfect example. Like, I should be able to remember the last thing I just said. Like, oh man, this is, oh, I know what I was going to say. And I can't, other, the last like really innovative tech thing I could think of is really like Uber, Airbnb, like that time. We have not had anything else really since then. I can't think of anything else.
Do you remember how WeWork was kind of disruptive at first to the industry, and then it quickly folded? That was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. WeWork has a very interesting story. I didn't finish it, but I started their little documentary thing. That was, and that could have been a really, really good, that was a good idea. So many things that like turned out terrible were good ideas. The Thurnan girl with the turtleneck, the deep voice, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Holmes, great idea. Didn't work out. She's in jail now, for those that don't know. But there's so many ideas that were like really good that just didn't
yeah
end through.
It's so important to innovate as you go. And I think this isn't super relevant, but I do think actually one of the best innovate as you go ideas that I've seen is how Kohl's made themselves an Amazon shipment center, like you can bring your Amazon returns to Kohl's.
I did not know that.
That's really smart, because then you get people in the door and then they look around and they smell the smells and they look at the things, and that was really smart. And I think also the putting the Sephora's and the Kohl's and the JCPenney, also brilliant.
That is smart, because let me tell you, I can't think of a reason I would walk into Kohl's other than to drop off my Amazon, but if I'm already in there, then why not look around? That's smart. That is innovative. Yeah, you're right. Like, you have to stay relevant, to keep your, now we're a business podcast, to stay relevant, to keep your customer base, to keep improving. Because, like, the idea is, like, every business is really supposed to improve humanity. Even the stupidest, dumbest business that has ever been created, the idea is really to improve humanity. But to do that, you do have to keep innovating. You have to keep moving, because the last 15 years have gone, maybe 20 years at this point, we've seen so much growth. You gotta keep moving.
Absolutely. And hopefully this inspires some younger entrepreneurs to be less distracted and solve problems, because we're capable of it. And we've actually, if we take into account the trauma that we've actually experienced versus what we've experienced secondhand, maybe we can give us a little bit of a realistic perspective about how stressed we should actually be. And I think
I was about to say perspective shift.
Be careful about what you take in and how much time you spend taking in news, because actually, I just learned this. Your brain cannot tell the difference between a thought that, like, that you don't want to happen versus, like, you do want to happen. Like, it feels like it's happening to it. So when you take in content that's not happening to you, it can actually it can hurt your brain in a similar way to the way that experiencing something or it being something that you're remembering, it has a similar effect on the brain.
Yeah.
And so we have to remember that we are fragile, that our minds and hearts are fragile, and it's actually wisdom to protect them and not comment on everything and not even know about everything. Because if we are able to keep our hearts and minds in a joyful and optimistic and feeling safe space, then we're actually going to be able to focus our energies on creating things that are going to help people and help the world.
Yeah. And I, last thing on this topic, and I want to add to what you just said, I want to release everyone. You do not have to release a press statement on every world event or every national event. You don't have to release a press statement. Every time something happens, people feel like you have to release some sort of statement on your opinion within the first, like, 24 hours. I want to release that from you. You don't have to do it. And if you I have that mindset with Those Are the Girls. I used to, because, like, technically it's, like, news or whatever. First of all, I prefer, like, doing Christian and, like, pop culture. Like, that's, especially nowadays, like, that's kind of more. I'd rather be the, your escapism. But when it was a little bit more new, I used to be like, I gotta be the first person to say something. And then, you know, I say something stupid. Sometimes it's okay. Just, like, don't say anything until you know more. And it's okay. I wish more of us did that. I do. I really wish more of us kept our mouths closed and waited and then spoke. But we really have to change or move on to the next topic. It's been 41 minutes.
This is so us.
It's so us. I can kind of piggyback off. So when you were talking earlier, you said the comment about celebrities are not as rich as we think.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say this too. Who created Honest? That was Jennifer Garner, right?
No, that was company? Jessica Alba.
Jessica Alba. So I was listening to a podcast and they made this point. Honest, huge brand, huge company. She's never in, like, the billionaire list, which is crazy because you would think how big it is, it would be billionaire status, but it's not. So celebrities aren't really as they seem. Mm-hmm. Similarly to what we're kind of want to talk about, we might do a separate episode that does a deeper dive, but there's, like, conversation around this topic. We want to talk a little bit about what was going on at Nickelodeon with Dan So I'll go ahead and say trigger warning now. I don't think we'll get like too into the weeds, but if you're like, you don't want to hear about this, or if you think it's been talked about too much, don't worry. We're going to like touch other topics about it. But like, if it's just something you can't hear, you can go ahead and like fast forward and then go ahead and leave the 5 stars. So, Jamie's seen the first episode. I've seen all of them except for the one with Drake Bell. And for those who haven't seen it, I'll just give like a quick kind of like overview, and then we'll kind of discuss it and like a thought that I had. Essentially, I'll talk about the first episode specifically, and you can tell me your thoughts on this. It was all about Amanda Bynes, and it made me feel really icky she was not part of it. Like, it felt like someone was telling her story without her permission. I don't know. She could have said, go for it. I know you can't tell, you can't talk about Dan Schneider without talking about Amanda Bynes, because it seems like it was a huge problem, but like, it focused a lot on Amanda Bynes, and she wasn't interviewed, and that just felt very icky. How did you feel about that?
I have a little bit of inside Hollywood knowledge. For those of you who do not know or remember, I used to work with celebrities in LA and in New York City. I've done a few jobs for Nickelodeon. And so I know people in this circle. And when it comes to Amanda, even people who don't personally know anyone connected can tell you that her parents have been very, very controlling for many, many years of her life, of her adult life. And so, frankly, I'm actually not certain that she was able to speak. I'm sure they tried to reach her, but I don't think they were successful. And I don't know if anyone remembers, I think this was a few months ago, where Amanda was found wandering the streets naked.
Yes. Okay,
so why would that happen? Well, this is a pretty common prisoner technique that people will use. They will take your clothes so that you cannot escape. So that when you escape, you're either too embarrassed to escape. This is what they do to prostitutes, like human trafficking victims. They will take their clothes to keep them in a brothel or whatever situation they're in, so that either they can't escape, they'll be easily found, they'll be embarrassed, and
look crazy.
Look crazy. Or like, how hard is it to get somewhere without shoes? You know, I can barely walk in a nice, soft, grassy area without shoes on before princess feet over here needs to get back inside. So, judging by what I know about Hollywood, because it is, for those people that are like, it can't be as sinister as it seems. I worked in Hollywood. It's as sinister as they're making out to be, and worse. Okay. So let's just take that off the table. For those of you who are skeptics, raise your hand if you've worked in Hollywood. Oh, your hand's down. Mine's up. Okay. So sit down. But Amanda, and like I said, this is only a few months ago, she was in a situation where what it looks like to me, that she was in a situation where she was trapped, and whoever it was holding her did not want her to escape. And so they took her clothes. If you look at her, if you look the way she speaks, a lot of people probably seen her on TikTok and on her podcast. And a lot of people probably think, oh, like drugs, or that's crazy. Let me tell you something, as somebody who's worked in Hollywood and has worked with people who are in these states of mind, what you are looking at is not a drugged out person. What you are looking at is somebody whose mind is broken. How do you break someone's mind? Sad. You break it while they're young. And so there are clearly traumas that she experienced when she was young that were repressed, that she was disassociated from, that at some point reared its head and came out. And then someone probably tried to be like, shove that back in, because we don't want that person exposed. We don't want to tell this story. But really, what happens to a child, I've seen this happen over and over again to people in the industry and people outside of the industry, when they look like this, when they speak like that, when they have difficulty thinking like that, every single time I can tell you what has happened is sexual abuse. Because nothing breaks a person like being sexually abused, and nothing breaks a person like being sexually abused as a child.
Yeah.
So I have seen time and time again, actors who've dealt with this and regular people who have dealt with this, when they seem, oh, it's two fingers, it seems like, that the cause
you might have to do like this specifically.
Let me see if I could. Nope, not three. Okay. when I see this every single time, if someone is sexually abused as a child, what has happened to Amanda and what has happened to many other people is the effect that she has in her speaking, in the way that she's able to comprehend, and also in how she is able to be controlled by people who are more powerful than her. And so when I see that Amanda wasn't interviewed or wasn't a part of it, I don't think that was her will. I think that whoever is in charge of her, be it her parents who are controlling her estate, whatever it is, I don't think she's allowed to speak out. And I think we all also remember that she tweeted, this was several years ago, that Dan Schneider was the reason why she could not have children. And it came out that there was somebody who Dan had worked with who was forced to have an abortion as a young teen or a child. And many have suspected, and I don't know this for sure, many have suspected.
Yeah, all alleged. Anyone listening, lawyers, alleged, continue.
This is alleged. But as someone who's worked in Hollywood, who has heard a lot of rumors in Hollywood, I can tell you that majority of the time when you hear a rumor in Hollywood, an allegation, but nobody's willing to actually stand up and confirm it, usually it's true. And and that's majority of the time. It's not like, you know, some places where there's like gossipy places that you may have experienced where it's a lot of lies. This is not the Southeast of America. In Hollywood, the rumors are true.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe you. I wonder if she saw it, because like that could also be re-traumatizing. Like, I hope she didn't see it. Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears has my heart. Her, Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, and honestly, kind of Brittany Murphy, RIP. Those women they always stood out to me. I don't know. I really liked them. Death
was very suspicious.
Very suspicious. I watched a documentary on that. Like, very suspicious. And, you know, another conversation we can have, but all of these older men with these young women. Like, you know, we see that. Well, we don't see it, but like, I had a friend in high school that was 17, dating, I think he was like 22 or something. And we were like, oh, you know, at 17. Now I'm like, I can't believe I was jealous of her. Like that type of thing. But like in hot, like Brittany Murphy's husband was like 10, 20 years older than her. And that's kind of, I wouldn't say like super common, but like that happens. Oh my goodness. This is kind of a side note. Did you see Aoki Simmons? Have you seen her boyfriend?
No. What happened?
Oh my goodness. She's dating a 62-year-old. Now this girl is, I think she's 21. Maybe, let me just triple check. She is dating we're going to go right back on topic, but I just want to say, like, this is an example of, and this is what's so sad. It's an example of, like, I saw someone say, like, generational trauma as well as, like, daddy issues. Because, you know, her mom dated or married or whatever they were when she was 17, I think, and Russell Simmons was, like, 40-something, maybe. So she's doing what her mom was doing, and, you know, they absolutely have daddy issues. Russell Simmons has a bunch of things going on, allegedly Diddy type stuff going on with him. But anyway, that's Hollywood, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
She's 21. Sorry.
Unfortunately.
And he's 65.
Yeah. That sexual abuse in Hollywood, extremely common.
Yeah. It's really sad. You haven't seen it yet, but like sometimes they had two parents on there. No, they had three parents. Drake's dad, amazing guy, like 10 out of 10, loves his son. The two moms, and you know, I love moms, like I'm not anti-mom. The two moms, one of them was very like I'll just spoil it. So spoilers if you haven't seen it. In the second episode, they talk about there were actually three pedophiles on the set of all that. So what's also crazy is, like, except for the first and the last episode were pretty much about Dan. Is it, wait, Dan Snyder? Dan, who's Dan Harmon?
Dan Schneider is the producer, writer. So Dan Harmon, I don't know who that is.
Okay, Dan Schneider. Dan Harmon does, like, Rick and Morty. I'm sure people get it mixed up, and he's probably, like, frustrated. Okay, Dan Schneider. So the first episode and, like, the last episode were really about him, but the one in between were kind of about, there were three pedophiles that actually worked for all that during that time. And one of them, and this is the craziest thing you're going to ever hear, one of them became friends with this lady's daughter. And it was an older guy. He was in his 20s. I think he probably came off as, like, gay. And he was the person who was like, okay, mom, like, talk with the moms and then bring the kids onto set and everything. Like, came off as, like, kind of, you're gay. Like, that was the vibe I got that people thought he was. So, you know, you're not suspecting anything. Well, he was actually a pedophile. And became friends with this woman's daughter and would hang out and all of these other things. Well, one day, the girl got really upset. The daughter got so upset. She was mad about something. She slammed her laptop shut and then ran upstairs because she was, and the mom was like, what's wrong? What's wrong? This disgusting man sent her daughter a nude. And the woman goes, I didn't know what to do. If I told the police, it could ruin her career. She could da 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 da. And she didn't tell the police. And that's just so, like, crazy to me that the mom, like, the kid, completely understand. Anyone, honestly, under 18, whatever they, however they responded, like, you know, because even, you know, people were upset with Josh Peck because Josh Peck isn't, like, you know, wasn't part of the documentary. He doesn't have any bad stories with Dan Harmon, but we can't blame Josh Peck because he's a kid. And the truth of the, not Dan Harmon, I'm so sorry, Dan Harmon, Dan Schneider. Because the truth of the matter is how people, like, abusers can act one way toward one person, another way to another person. There's so many serial killers that their families were like, we had no idea. Oh, he's just such a sweet, lovey guy. Now, there's some that everybody's like, oh, this is not shocking. But there are some that, like, we had no idea. He was always a good father to our children. He would never hurt a fly. People can do that. And, but yeah, so anyway, so, oh, lost my train of thought thinking about people being fake like that. So back to the mom. So the mom just was like, I didn't know what to do. So she never went back to the Nickelodeon set, but it's like, hello, you report the pedophile that sent your child nudes. It was just so crazy, you guys. It was a crazy documentary.
I don't know if I think I saw the first episode where there was a guy who had a similar job where it was found in his possession when the police went into his apartment that he had a pair of underwear.
Yeah, that was the second episode. You must have seen two then.
Okay, so yes, I saw episode two then. That was the only episode I saw. So he was the one found with the underwear of the 7-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I know about him and was it Brian Peck?
Brian Peck
covered in that episode. So that was wild. Yeah, I am trying to find the Greek word. Actually, I think this is worth finding because for those of you that know me, know that I can't get through anything without quoting a scripture. So I just need
you find it, and I have another thing I want to comment on.
Yes, you go on.
So I like the biggest lesson I think in all of that is, or like, I guess not the lesson, but like a takeaway in all of this is we have to do better at protecting kids. I don't think there's anything wrong if kids like acting and they want to be on a TV show. One thing that I want to talk about, we'll talk about this after Jay finds the scripture, is like we do kind of need younger shows. Like, if we think about the shows that are on now, that, like, there's no iCarly's. That's a bad example because of the situation we're talking about. There's no Hannah Montana's. Hannah Montana is so, I mean, look at the fashion. Look at how they dress. Look at the, even the silly scenarios they were in. There's no Hannah Montana, like, show for kids these days. But that, we'll have that conversation in a second. But anyway, like, I think the biggest takeaway is, like, we have to, as a parent specifically, you gotta be on top of what's going on. Because the thing is, it sounds like the people who do not have, some of the people who have really active parents, they came out okay. Now, are there, were there people whose parents were active and they didn't come out okay? Sure. You know, is it completely the parents' fault? The only person we can blame, the only person who takes full responsibility is the actual, you know, abuser. But parents absolutely need to take, they have to take some sort of responsibility. And it seems like people whose parents were really, really involved, they came out okay. I think about the girl from Spy Kids. She talks about that. I heard her on a podcast once. Yeah. Alexa Vega. Yes. I heard her on a podcast once say that, because someone was like, how are you so normal? And like, she's a Christian, everyone. And she's super pro-life. Just throwing that out there. And they were like, how did you come out like this? And she said that her mom was like really, really involved. Like, her mom made sure she was always there. And there was, like, another part in the episode where, like, when all the things happened with Brian Peck, he was the convicted pedophile, and he's the person who abused Drake. When, like, I think it was, like, the day after he was arrested, all of the kids and their parents were in a room, and then some guy came in with, like, a cop or something and said all the parents have to leave the room. We have to ask the kids a question. I don't understand how, as a parent, you get up. Like, but all the parents left. That is so crazy. Now, I'm not a parent, so, like, and I'm trying not to judge, but, like,
this is in the 90s, that is so crazy too. To me. So, yeah. So now people are more aware of what goes on. True. But in the 90s, like, I don't know if anybody grew up in the 90s or remember what it was like, but you felt really safe majority all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, and, okay, so then there's that aspect of it. Like some of the things, or even like some of the jokes that they had on the show, until they laid it out, some of them, I even was like, oh, I didn't realize that was sexual. There was a lot of things that you're so innocent. Most of us, I think, are so innocent. You're not thinking about, you don't see. It's these actual perverts who, they're perverts and they're porn addicts, which they didn't get into that, but that is a huge role of it. Mm-hmm. There was the part where one of the writers was saying how Dan Schneider was like, oh, why don't you pretend to, he said something like, why don't you pretend to bend over this table and I'll pretend to like hit, like smack you, or like you pretend like you're something sexual. And everybody's like, what? That's something from porn. Like, these people, like, it warps your brain. It really does. And that's, you know, another episode, but
yeah,
just throwing that in there.
I think too, there's like this lie that people will put out about whether it's the porn industry or the sex industry, that, oh, if people had a way to like feed these desires in a way that was legal, then it would keep them from doing all this crazy stuff. That's not true. And that's also something that's been disproven by studies and by practice. But really, like, what you eat, what you feed yourself with, you begin to crave. And anybody who mm-hmm. has repeatedly eaten the same type of food, and you know that when you get hungry, you're like, oh, like, you're thinking of the food that you usually eat. You're not thinking, like, I want to have some food I've never tried before. Right. And it's the same thing with your mind. So you're feeding your mind sexual perverted trash. You're going to start thinking sexual perverted trash things. And anybody who also has ever been in a relationship with someone who had a porn addiction knows how bad your sex life is, because they are getting off on what they've seen and not what actually really gives people pleasure, but what actually looks good on camera or like good on camera. So yeah, it's pretty clear that the way that they think and their expectations are on set has been very much shaped by porn.
Brian Peck, Like, they just came off as such nice, sweet, oh, fun guys. And they're, like, disgusting, like, deviants. I mean, bled into so many other aspects of the life. Because, like, he was getting the underwear from the girls. He was writing about it in his journal. I mean, Brian Peck was, like, not a nice guy. Like, it's just so many other things. That's very interesting. And how it's all connected.
And it is interesting, too, like, people who are involved in these kind of lifestyles, like, even if, like, just, like, it always comes out in some way. Like, I cannot believe I didn't pick up on that pickle joke as a kid at all. Like, went right over my head.
I had no idea. That was one of the things I was saying earlier. I was like, there were things I was watching. Well, I will say this. I never thought it was funny because that's just not my humor. But there were parts that I was watching, even on the show as, like, an adult, and I was like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that is that. Like, even the Ray Romano thing, like, if I didn't know we were talking about, like, if I didn't know the context was, like, this is going to be something sexual, I don't know if I would have picked up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, and Ray Romano wasn't a pervert or anything, I just want to say that. He just was in an episode, and he did a gag, and I think that, like, I really don't think, like, especially because, like, in the context of, this is a children's show, why would there be anything sexual in the children's show? You're not thinking that. Or even, like, the water bottle on when, I'm sure you've seen the clip where Kat's laying on the bed and she has the water bottle she's putting on herself. Like, I just thought, oh, this silly girl, she's so silly and dumb. But, I mean, within the context of, like, oh, this is sexual, like, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting because, like, at some point, like, these people, like, cannot hide themselves or control themselves. Like, when they feel comfortable, it just comes out.
Yes.
Like, I said this before, there's no HR department in Hollywood.
Yeah.
People don't get caught while you are coming up in your career. If someone has a position of power, like, you just kind of have to do whatever to either hopefully stay under the radar with certain people and get hired by the good ones, or just kind of keep quiet until you get to a point where you're powerful enough that people believe you. Because people aren't going to believe an intern that tells a story as much as they believe somebody who has something to lose.
Yeah.
Like an actor with a career. And so, I mean, I've even seen PR people, like, they tell, like, their actor clients who are married or and they're flirting with someone, and they will say to them, like, look, if you're going to cheat on your wife, if you're going to do something stupid, be at least smart. Don't do it with the intern. Don't do it with somebody who's got a low level job who has nothing to lose. Do it with somebody who, if this came out, they would be damaged by that too. And that is how, yeah. And unfortunately, like, that's what happens, because these people are, like, they've been kind of conditioned into getting everything they want. And so that kind of situation creates a monster. It creates a person who thinks, I can have whatever I want whenever I want it. And that's what you have in Hollywood, is people who are in these positions of power who, if you are messing with someone who, it would damage their reputation for anything to come out, or you have their career at least partially in your hands, you're going to have a lot of silent people, and you're going to be able to do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And that's why Dan and a lot of other people who have been and have yet to be caught got away with things for so long, because people don't believe them, and it's not worth speaking out. And I even think now, like, what Corey Feldman, people are finally starting to believe him about what he said about the abuse that he experienced.
Corey who? Feldman?
I think it's Corey Feldman, because he was friends with Corey Haim, who I think may have killed himself.
Oh, wow.
But he was very outspoken about being abused. And he, oh, yeah, it was Corey Feldman. I was correct.
Oh, wow.
I would definitely recommend looking into his interviews, because he's been talking about the sexual abuse in Hollywood for a long time, and people have really only just started to validate what he was saying. And he was actually interviewed, I think it was by TMZ on the street, about quiet on set, and he was really happy that they were speaking out about it, because for so long he was the only person who was willing to speak out. He was like, this is an industry of pedophiles, and he said that. He's also one of the people that said that Michael Jackson never abused him, and he didn't believe that Michael Jackson actually was the pedophile in the situation, but that he was allowing children to sleep in his room to protect them.
Oh, that's interesting. And McCulkey, he said Michael Jackson never did anything to him either. That's interesting. The protection thing, I heard through, like, I don't even, like, a, I want to say on Joe Rogan, that he was, like, castrated. So he didn't even have, like, sexual feelings. Now, I don't know how true that is.
Wow. But, I didn't know that one.
Yeah, I heard that he was, like, to keep his voice low, they castrated him, his parents. Which, back to, like, abusing children. Yeah. Or, sorry, to keep it high.
Yeah.
Back to abusing children to get money for that. That's what I heard. This is all alleged.
Wow.
I heard, so he didn't even, he just was messed up that, like, he thought these children were his friends. But that's interesting, the protecting him, protecting the kids. I don't know. I don't know enough about the situation. I just know things I've heard.
Around that time, he was also trying to get the legal ownership of his music. And what will often happen is when people who are musicians who have an extensive catalog try to get the legal ownership of their music to be just them and not owned by the label. For those of you who don't know, if you are a musician, you record with a label, you don't own the rights to your songs that you've written and recorded. And even some contracts will say that they own you for a certain amount of time, which is why when people were like, oh, why did JoJo go away for so long? She didn't really have a choice, because the label that she was signed to owned her for X amount of years. Anything that she wrote, anything that she released, either had to be released through them or wouldn't be released at all. And so
if Kesha
wrote a record. Yeah, Kesha. Exactly. So she wrote a recorded during that time. It would be theirs and they could squish it. This happened to another friend, a friend client of mine. She had a whole album that Columbia is like keeping under wraps. Like it's heartbreaking, because I love the recordings of some of these songs, and some of them she's re-recorded, but there's nothing like the way it was recorded at that time, because it was supposed to come out in that time.
Yeah.
And those recordings are lost forever because Columbia just owns them and owned her for X amount of years. And
that's crazy.
So what will happen with these artists who want to buy back their catalogs, because they maybe own like 10% or something of the sales, the proceeds from whether it's streamed or used in a film or a commercial, whatever, like 10% ownership of their song. Most of their ownership is to the label, publishing companies. And so Michael was trying to get, if I recall correctly, and this one you can actually feel free to correct me about if you do know, but around the time that all of this went down, he was trying to buy his music catalog back. The other person that tried to do this also unsuccessfully was Prince. Around the time that he tried to buy the rights to his music to get that back, he died.
Interesting. And
as far as I know, the only musician who's really been successful at this was Taylor Swift. And and that, I just have to say, if you're able to fight the machine, you may actually be working with the machine.
Ooh, another, you are spicy tonight. That's another spicy take.
I'm spicy all the time. We just don't talk enough.
fair. We should do this more and catch up more. So we're at an hour 15. I'll maybe go another 5 minutes, because I really want to get to the other part that I was talking about earlier, because I want to get your take. So what I was saying earlier is the reality. So it's like, where do we go from here? How do we make children's television, how do we give children that like acting and have all this talent, what do we do for those kids, like the ones in the future? And a lot of people are saying, we don't have, we'll just give them all out of Hollywood, we don't need kids to be in shows. But I say, this is my hot take, I say pause, we actually kind of do. Let me explain a little bit more. So I actually saw a really good video essay, if I can find it I'll link it. It was about how the tween girls have they disappear. We no longer have tween girls. And this is very true. You can go outside, go to your local, I was going to say your local mall, but they're not there either. Go outside and go to your local high school, you know, with the permission, you know, get the, that anyway. Your local high school, and you'll see that we no longer have tween girls. And a huge reason, I think, is because of social media. When you are, you know, if you should, I personally don't think you should be on TikTok at 10, but let's say you, you know, parent gives their kid access to TikTok at 10, you're not going to follow, sure, you'll follow your fellow 10-year-olds, but you're not going to follow a 10-year-old celebrity. You're going to follow celebrities from your favorite shows. Well, what shows are you watching? You're watching things like Riverdale, unfortunately, maybe not at 10, but like, well, actually, maybe at 10, you're watching Riverdale, you're watching Euphoria. These are all the teen shows right now, okay? Oh, God.
I needed a palate cleanser after one episode of Riverdale. It was so dark that I actually, when I had a friend who was watching it and I was watching it with her, in order to actually keep up and be able to talk to her about it, I would watch, after watching one episode of Riverdale, I would have to watch two episodes of Fuller House to like palate cleanse. That's so funny. But unfortunately, yeah. I finished Fuller House before I was able to get through two seasons of Riverdale because I needed so much palate cleansing.
Yeah, Riverdale, like, get... Okay, so, like, the first season is dark because it's true crime. But I feel like it isn't as, like, you know, sexy. It's, like, season two through the end where it's, like... And especially toward the end because they aged them up, finally. And I think... it was around the time it started to get a little loosey-goosey with, like, all the rules on TV. It just got to be, like, you know, I'm fast-forwarding, like, come on, I, why are we having sex right now? This has nothing to do with anything. Like, it started just to get really bad. But my thing is, though, like, there should be, nobody in high school, middle school, they shouldn't be watching that. But they don't have it. They don't have the Hannah Montanas. They don't have the Kim Possibles. They don't have those. So what they're doing is they're watching them. And then the thing that's really hard is, like, I think the girl who played Betty was so beautiful. I think, what's her name? Lily Reinhart.
Oh, yeah.
Gorgeous. She's woman.
Gorgeous. And she looks a lot like Brittany Murphy.
She does. She does. And Brittany Murphy was beautiful. But the thing is, she's 25. So she's going to have a 25-year-old body. She'll have 25-year-old skin. She's going to have 25-year-old curves. I'll even say 16, even though she was playing a 16-year-old, you're not going to look like Lily Reinhart. Not only are you not going to look like Lily Reinhart, the scenarios on Riverdale were so ridiculous. Veronica ran a speakeasy in high school. I'm sorry, that's so unrealistic. Archie went to jail and played football and then in jail against, like, another jail. And then his former high school cheerleading team came to cheer them on through the fence. Like, these aren't real scenarios. Now, granted, most of the scenarios on Hannah Montana, like, you know, we're not pop star. Well, some of you are. I was. No, I'm just joking. You know, most of us were pop stars at night, high schools by day. But we all could relate to having a crush on someone and, like, getting a little nervous when we spoke. Like, there was just, it's just so much more tame, but we don't have shows like that. And part of it is we also don't have, like, and Hannah looked 16 because she was 16 when she played someone 16. So these girls are looking up to these people who have that. And anyway, my whole point being is, like, I don't think that we should be getting rid of, like, kids working in Hollywood altogether. I think we need to do better.
You know what show did really well? It affects. At this was Degrassi. And the way that Degrassi...
Yeah, agreed.
First of all, if you look at all the Degrassi kids all grown up, none of them look like they've been essayed or they're really messed up.
Interesting because they had some really kind of dark themes.
They had racy stuff going on that show. I to the point where I'm like, I don't even really want to rewatch this. Like, the first episode was...
Yeah.
Emma as, like, I think she was, like, 13 years old, meeting up with a pedophile that she met online who was posing as a 13-year-old boy.
Yeah.
First episode in.
Yeah.
Out the gate.
Right out the gate.
But, and I've met some of these people, and they're pretty stable people, but what I will say that Degrassi did right that I think actually helps a lot was that it was such a a cast show. There wasn't like a lot of work being pushed out of one person. And I know when Miley talks about working on Hannah Montana, about how much work it was and how much coffee she had to drink, and just like what a difficult, and I've worked in film. God, it's so difficult. I don't know why anybody would want to do it. It's just physically demanding, even when you're not the star of a show. And so I think what Degrassi did really right is they are not asking a lot of their actors because they have so many of them. And yeah. You know, that episode was like really mostly Emma, Manny, JT, and they worked a lot in that episode. And then like the next episode will maybe be more about Ashley and Jimmy. And so then, and Terry, like those are the actors that are
working. Yeah.
And you'll still see the other actors, but they're not in the A storyline all the time. The characters yeah. that are in the A storyline change up every episode. And then some are more in B and C storylines. And sometimes you don't see them at all because they have such a large cast. So nobody's getting overworked. And I think that's a big key to successfully doing a kids show with kid actors. And the other thing I would say is we just need to be better about the way we treat parents who want to be on set with their kids. I think there's so many negative connotations in the industry that unfortunately can be really true, like because you have momagers that actually don't know the industry very well. But then, of course, Ariana Grande had a momager, and we see how that worked out. She actually pushed her daughter, as far as I've heard, allegedly pushed her daughter into doing whatever she needed to do. To get where she is. So her mom, as far as I've heard, allegedly encouraged that. So unfortunately, you will see parents, and Amanda Bynes' parents obviously no help either, because they've been a part of keeping her controlled and silent as well. So,
and Jeanette McCurdy, she had that whole book about her mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think on one hand, I would like to see, because I've been on Nickelodeon sets with parents, and the parents have been, I've always had good experience, like annoying experiences, but like the parents are good. They're just like, they don't know what's going on. They slow down the process. It does cost money to have them there. It does slow down everything. So that's unfortunate. And there's a lot of incentive to get parents off the set just from a professional perspective. And that's why people want to have shows like Riverdale where, oh, let's not deal with parents at all. Let's just have adults play kids. Which is really great for those of us who walk around in our late 20s, early 30s, and then people older than us think we're teens, and it's because that's the representation. So right, thank you, Hollywood. Right.
That is, yeah, that's helpful for us, well, but, you know, the youth are struggling.
But definitely not worth the not having role models for kids. But yeah, I've from an industry standpoint, I can tell you, like, keeping parents off the set is not always a creepy control thing. It's actually parents do hold up a lot, and some of them are partners in the process in a negative way. But I do think it should be easier to bring protective parties with you on set. But there mm-hmm. also needs to be a way to regulate that, because, like I said, it slows the set down. It costs a lot of money to have the production slow down. I've actually seen it happen. So it does happen, and that's why people don't want them there. But there needs to be a better structure put in place so that that can be present. And I didn't get to say this earlier. We were talking about Quiet on Set, but apparently, I don't know if they said this in the doc, but the person who encouraged Drake Bell to speak up about his abuse was his girlfriend's parents at the time. And the girlfriend was Fifi Dobson.
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, when they said that, I was like, and I was, oh my goodness, wow, that's so crazy. They're not Fifi. Even
back in the day.
Are they even friends right now?
Gosh, she had a banger album in the early 2000s. But that's a parent that was on set that was helpful. So even if one parent is being not so helpful, at least there are other parents around. So it should be easier to have protective parties around and not just one person looking out for the kid as well. So I think those are my two suggestions. Find a way to make it easier for parents to be there but not too involved, because they slow the set down, and ensemble cast shows with the A storyline switching up who the mains are.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And I think we really have to wrap up. The only thing is, and that the ensemble thing will help, because there's so many people, the kids aren't going to get as much time, so they're not going to get paid as much. And it's going to help with those parents that are really Because, like, that's the other problem with the pressure of kids doing this is, like, some of these kids are paying their parents bills. Like, there's no reason a 12-year-old should feel the pressure of, like, running their household. So I mm-hmm. think if they're not getting paid as much, it's going to deter parents to, like, forcing their kids to do this all because they, it's probably just, because I think that was one of the things they said, like, people on Degrassi, they didn't make that much. It was just, like, fun spending money. But they got to do something that they enjoyed. And I think that's the thing that I'm like, if they're good at it and they enjoy it, why not? It's just, it has to be a good, positive environment. And you got to keep your eye on them. And I wonder if there's a way they could get parents to, like, go through a class. I guess sometimes, though, like, a parent's going to parent. But, yeah. Is there anything else you want to add?
I think that's all I can think of to fix the situation. But I definitely agree with you. We need to see actual kids and also those actual kids styled correctly and go through a change as far as when you do grow up, that that coming of age part of their journey where they do so appropriately. I think maybe Degrassi did not do that so well when it comes to Manny Santos. But they did it in a very authentic way, and I like that they didn't go as overboard as they could have.
I was going to say, it could be a little bit worse, but yeah,
it was unfortunately a little out there. Very realistic. So
yeah,
but I think a lot of the characters aged really well and went through their little changes you go through as you grow up, like Ashley going from like the popular girl to the goth girl.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of like an alterna scene girl. And based on like basically how her peers accepted her. So I think there's a lot of ways that you change and that you go through phases as a kid that were done really well in that show. And they don't all have to be sexualized. It can really be just about finding yourself. And I think honestly, maybe just call up Canada for one of the few things they can contribute to the world and get their notes on how they did Degrassi.
Yeah. Any producers listening that want to do kids shows, that is our suggestions. Mm-hmm. Well, Jay, thank you so much for coming on. This was a great episode. A little lengthy, but I mean, that's how we normally do things. Yeah, that's just how we do things. If you enjoyed this episode, if you thought it was really spicy, if you're just like, I really don't know how you were triggering.
How did they get
it? It happened like
balloons
3 times. I thought it was that. I don't know. maybe it was words you were saying. Well, I don't even remember what we were talking about. But yeah, so thank you guys for listening. Leave a review if you enjoyed this, if you thought it was really spicy, if you're like, oh, some of these things I totally agree with. If you're like, oh, I don't really agree with everything. Some of the things, like, let us know. If you have fun, fresh ideas on how to get the youth to not be crazy, that's good too. If you have an entrepreneurship idea that you think is really great and exciting, don't tell us. Go and do it. You don't want mm-hmm. someone else to steal it. You go do it. You be that person. If you are one of the billionaires listening, I'd love an investment in the podcast. I guess that's it. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
And if you are happy with anything I said or mad at me, you can find me at Happy and Holy Co.
Yes.
Please don't let anything I said. I know I was really spicy and divisive, but I have many personal experiences as to why. So do not hold that against Mal. If you're looking to complain to me directly, you can find me at my podcast with my best friend, Wenny. We are at Happy and Holy Co. on most social media platforms, Happy and Holy TV on YouTube. And, you can find us at happyandholyco.com. So all complaints or, compliments, please send them directly to me and give Mal 5 stars.
Thank you. Thank you. And I'll link all of her social media so you guys can follow her and follow the podcast as well. All right, everybody. Have a great day, night, evening, however, wherever you're listening. Bye.